You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
Back in the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Jim Ross is joining us here today. Under the Black Hat, his newest book, available right now, Amazon.com. I presume find booksellers everywhere, and despite the fact that I guess all these booksellers are not open right now, but... Jim, tell us a little bit about this second book, then we're going to get into some questions here.
Well, you know, Brian, the book came out at a very unique time. Considering the virus and it shut the doors to a lot of Barnes & Nobles and other Books and Millions and stores like that. You can also get a signed copy at my website, which is jrsbbq.com, jrsbbq.com. The first book, Paul O'Brien and I wrote it like an episodic television show. We wanted it to have some symmetry, and so we did that by making it chronologically correct. And it took us through Austin beating Shawn Michaels for the WWE title, and when I came back and all that stuff. Anyway, so that's where we ended it. Subsequently, we always had a plan for a second book because there's too many interesting things to talk about that will always be a part of the fabric of the history of pro wrestling. The Monday Night Wars, the Attitude Era, the company going public, the first XFL. You know, I got the Bell's Palsy assaults that I had. And then, you know, being on the Raw for so many years and suddenly being taken off after being told I wasn't, things like that. Just explain it and how I felt at the time and what role my wife played in everything that was going along the way. You know, when you're overweight, I'll say that. I'll fat shame myself. I'm trying, but nonetheless, a round-faced Southerner that can't smile because of Bell's palsy has a shaky footing in the world of television on camera. And I always carried that with me, and it always bothered me. It ate me alive. So all I could do is just keep working really, really hard, and then sometimes I got a bad hand. But then the biggest thing that happened was that my wife got killed, and she got killed in March of 17. And a lot of things happened around that time, and then subsequently, you know, signed a 2-year contract with WWE, then letting that expire, no negotiation, we're done, thank you very much, I appreciate everything, I sincerely do, I'm not going to be a turd, but I'm going to go try something else, because Tony Khan wants me to play every day. And there was no plans to use me in WWE. I'm not mad about it. That's their prerogative. I made a lot of money there. I'm very happy. But I had a chance to come here to AEW. And, you know, without sounding like I'm throwing WWE on the bus, I'm not, Brian. I sort of got it not. It's a breath of fresh air. It's a different presentation. The leader is 35 years old. The owner is 35 years old. That in itself gives you a different perspective. Now, some people are saying, well, there's what's the problem right there. Well, when you know his background and what he does with the Jaguars or the Fulham Football Club in England, you'd be surprised at what we've got here as an owner. He's pretty damn brilliant. So I thought there was a need to finish the book out, get me to AEW, which sets up, if I'm a good booker or a good writer, the early years of AEW somewhere down the road. So it needed to be written, and I needed for Jan to be recognized as the asset, so a lot of us alpha male, egocentric men don't think we do everything by ourselves, because we don't.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that about the owner of AEW being 35 years old, because, I mean, as you're well aware from being all over the place, I mean, the idea that Tony Khan, no experience in wrestling, aside from being like a huge fan who just kind of studied it for years and years. I mean, he stepped in there. He's half the age of Vince McMahon. And I don't have the numbers right now, but the impression that I've been given based on pre-orders and orders on Saturday is that this pay-per-view on Saturday did very well. And
oh, good. I haven't heard this. That's good news.
That's the impression I've been given. So don't hold me to that. But I know that on Saturday, like the early streaming numbers were very positive. They were up there with some of the other shows that they've done. So it looks like it did well. And,
great.
You know, you're talking about, you know, in April, this company, to the best of my knowledge, I mean, they made a little bit of money. And if they would have had live events and live gates, I mean, they would have made a lot of money in April. And you gotta, it's just, I don't want you to sit here on the air and kiss Tony's ass, but I mean, you would be a good person to ask since you've been around so many different promoters over the years. I mean, how can you explain that to fans? How, quite frankly, incredible it is that a 35-year-old guy with zero experience in pro wrestling has taken over or started this company, and within a year, I mean, there's network television. They're beating NXT on Wednesdays. They're profitable during a pandemic. I mean, it's almost impossible to believe.
We also beat Monday Night Raw a couple of times in New York City on the young male demographic. I think 18 to 34, 18 to 49, something like that.
And not just New York. It's at least once nationally.
Well, we know we got a long way to go. We get it. We sure do. It's refreshing to be here, and largely because of Tony. So I'm not going to go into some ass-kissing parade here. You hit the nail on the head earlier, Brian, when you said he was a student of the game. That's oftentimes thrown around kind of carelessly. Not that you did, because you didn't. But he truly is a student of the game and has been his entire life. Plus, he's got a photographic memory that's scary. He can recite stuff I said on Mid-South and the show and when it aired and all this other stuff. And he wasn't even born yet. He studied. He's watched tapes. That's been his hobby. Then he manages the Poland Football Club. He's one of the head honchos of an NFL franchise. And one of his specialties is data, all the metrics and stuff. He's amazing. He's the guy that finds some undrafted free agents in the draft because the numbers are all in place that he was looking for. So he studies what we do. He knows what works and what doesn't work. You know, we get the minute by minutes and all that crap. So he's brilliant. He really is. And, you know, and he's learning. The great thing I like about him is that he will not make the same mistake twice on purpose. His ego is not so out of control that he believes there are more than one right way to get something done. And so he explores that. And he loves to hear the feedback from the talent. What do you want to do? Can you do this better? What would you do? And so the talent's here. There are no writers. There's some coaches up with like Jerry Lenz and Dean Malenko, Billy Gunn, guys like that. But shoot, man, he's a good leader, Brian. He's a good leader. And his dad has had Tony in high level, high pressure positions. Not a hand-me-down job. Since he got out of college. So I know product knowledge. That's why he's surrounded. Look, you think Dean Malenko's got product knowledge, and Jerry Lynn and Billy Gunn and all Jericho. Good Lord. And myself and, you know, a lot of guys. So he surrounded himself with people that are learned in that world from a variety of positions and facets. So I think he's a great owner in that regard, because he listens to people. He has not said over five words to me in my headset since October. He lets me write my music and sing my own music, for better or for worse. I get to be me. And that's any performer can tell you, any announcer can tell you. I got to get a flow. I got to get a rhythm. Just like you. You got to find your rhythm, and all of a sudden stuff starts falling together.
I got to ask an impossible question here. If you could tell us one thing, the biggest difference between Vince McMahon and Tony Khan, what would one thing be?
Vince likes doers, and Tony likes White Claw. There you go.
So explain that.
White Claw is a trendy young drink. Well, like one of those seltzer things, I believe. I don't drink it. I go down a different road in that world. And Vince drinks Dewar Scotch. So you got a hard Scotch drinker when he drinks, which is a red wine. And Tony is a White Claw guy. It's a generational thing, Brian. It's a generational thing. Guys and Vince in my demographic have been drinking Scotch and red wine forever. But the new kid on the block is White Claw, and all these seltzers you see advertised on television. And Tony's a White Claw guy. It's a generational difference. One small one but just to illustrate, they're born in different generations. They've had different experiences, and they have different visions. You know, Tony's ability to write television is, I told him the other day, I said, you know, every show gets a little bit better. He's starting to learn the little nuances. He's a primary driving force creator, without a doubt. And I think he's doing a really good job, considering he's got all these other damn things on his plate.
Well, stand by. We're going to head to a break. When we come back, some talk about some of the chapters in Under the Black Hat with Jim Ross here on Wrestling Observer Live.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-754-4531. 800-754-4531. 800-754-4531. That's 800-754-4531. Attention timeshare owners. This is an urgent consumer alert from the Timeshare Exit Hotline, a national company specializing in helping consumers legally get out of their expensive timeshare contracts. We're offering you a way to legally get rid of your timeshare. So if you're fed up with the maintenance fees that keep on coming and want to learn if you can terminate your timeshare legally and permanently, call today. Even if you've tried before and were unsuccessful in getting rid of your timeshare, call today and see if we can help. We offer a complete 100% unconditional client satisfaction guarantee. Make this completely free call and learn how we can help you legally put an end to your timeshare nightmare once and for all. You have nothing to lose, so call right now to qualify and receive a free consultation. 800-880-7167. 800-880-7167. That's 800-880-7167. Paid for by Airtime Media. We are the Debt Destroyer Network. Any debt you have, credit card, tax, student loan debt, call now for free information that helps you destroy your debt. It's great advice. Plus, when you make this free call now, we have debt destroyer experts ready to help. They can show you how to destroy your debt and get your life back on track. Debt problems don't have to be overwhelming. You can live stress-free and debt-free. Credit cards, medical bills, IRS tax problems, even student loan debt. Learn about free programs offered by the credit card companies, hospitals, and even the government that can help slash your debt. Call the Debt Destroyer now for free information. Call now. 877-360-0402. 877-360-0402. 877-360-0402. That's 877-360-0402.
You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
Back in the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Jim Ross joining us here today, Under the Black Hat, the name of his newest book. Grab it on Amazon.com as well as JR's other, actually the barbecue sauce, JR, I've gotten a couple of bottles. And, is it the Chipotle ketchup? Is that?
Yes.
Okay, that's my wife's favorite. And I would be remiss if I did not tell you that. She absolutely loves it. So,
Next time you order, give me a heads up and I'll take care of you.
I will.
That's what we do. I'll give you the old hot tag.
Yes, please. The hot hand.
Yeah, I got it. And the thing about that Chipotle ketchup, if you put a little bit of it in a ramekin and put it in the microwave for 10 seconds, something like that, it warms it up, obviously, but it makes a really good steak sauce.
There you go.
So it's JRSBBQ.com, folks. Barbecue sauce. I got it off. I feel like I'm selling snake oil, but I'm not.
It's not snake oil.
Mom and Jan developed a lot of that stuff, and that the jalapeno honey mustard's got 1 gram of sugar, I think. So it's healthy as heck, and you can also get the autographed copy of the book there. So check us out. We appreciate your business, quite frankly.
Jan is a thread that runs through the entire book. I mean, virtually every single, and there's a lot of very short chapters. It's not like, the book is 5 chapters long. There's just so much to cover, but in virtually every chapter, I mean, there's that note about Jan and your memories of Jan during that period. And that's really the story of the entire book. And, I don't want to dwell on it too much here, but I mean, I guess one question, when this first happened, I remember a lot of details about that period pretty vividly. And you were immediately getting back to work. And obviously, I guess the idea, and you could tell everybody, but I mean, the idea being that you just got to get back to work. That's going to be the easiest way for you to deal with this. And everybody deals with grieving in a different way. And looking back the last 2-3 years, I mean, are you confident that that was the right decision? How much did that help to just get right back to work?
Oh, it helped me a lot, Brian. You're spot on. I had to get out of that empty house. Ironically, sadly, 4 days after Jan got killed, maybe four or five, not many, I went to Orlando. I had some shows in Orlando, the JR stage show deals, Q&A and stuff. And then I also, on Saturday, before WrestleMania that weekend, signed a 2-year contract. And I helped call. I was a sidekick, which was great, as Isha said, for the Undertaker, I think, Roman Reigns match. So it was a whirlwind deal. But then during that time, while I was in Orlando, Jan's cat died. He couldn't find her. I even had an autopsy. The doc said, the only thing I can tell you, seriously, he had too much anxiety, and he killed himself, type thing. I said, my God, it's what else is going to happen?
And wasn't the cat underneath the bed where Jan slept?
Yeah, she was under the bed on her side. That's where my guy that was taking care of my house found it. Mickey the cat. So Mickey the cat's ashes are on the mantle, and he babysits me, but I'm an alpha guy, alpha male kind of guy. I like to be around people. I like to be involved. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing right now. I love, by the way, but I couldn't handle the isolation. I didn't handle the being alone. I didn't want to even draw my blinds. I got these wooden blinds in my house. All of them are shut. And I got to feeling like I was going to be somebody like Howard Hughes. My fingernails were going to get long and my beard was going to grow. So anyway, I had to do something because it wasn't healthy for me. When I'm left alone in that distress and that anxiety, Brian, and full disclosure, because I am going to be, till I die, a man's man, JR doesn't always make the best decisions when left to his own devices in an altered state. And man, my state was as altered as it could be. I lost my lover, my wife, we were together over 25 years. Through everything, getting fired at WWE. She went through the whole 9 yards, man. We got married in 93. So, and I got fired the first time in 93. So it was going back and then coming back to Atlanta. It was a mess. And she stood by me the whole damn time. All my illnesses. She spotted that she told our doctor, he stops breathing at night. And he's got his hand on his hip like he's in a meeting. And he stops breathing. They find out I got sleep apnea. I stopped breathing 66 times in an hour. She saved my life. I'm a dead duck if I don't get that diagnosed. So it's a lot of things like that. And I just think that sometimes the significant others in our lives play such a vital role. And some of us, and looking at myself here, are too damn headstrong, arrogant, to admit it. So there's a buddy of mine bought the book. And he was out of town. The book came. His wife started reading it. She wouldn't give it back to him until she was finished with it. And she said, I just read an amazing love story. And Brian, I'll tell you, you know me for a long time. I'm not good at a lot of things. So I'm sure writing a love story is one of them. But anyway, it touched a lot of females.
You know, selfishly, one of the things that I love about the book is we did a long series looking at the Monday Night Wars, rewatched every single one of the Raw Nitro shows, which I don't know what I was thinking when I started, but we finished a couple of, about a month ago, and so everybody wanted us to continue, so we continued with the Raw after WrestleMania X7. And I pick up your book, and I mean, it's everything that I've just been watching. So it was fascinating. Brawl for All, Bart Gunn, Austin turning heel. I mean, there's so much. I just watched it, and I'm reading your thoughts on all of it. So selfishly, like the first half of the book is, it was like it was written for me. So I was very appreciative of that. But, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you about here was Steve Austin turns heel at WrestleMania X7. And the SmackDown after that WrestleMania is the show where you and him are in the ring together and he beats the hell out of you and he cuts you with like a scalpel. Okay.
Yeah.
So
how stupid were we all on that deal? That was crazy.
Okay. So now when I was young, I was very stupid. And when I did backyard wrestling, I only knew what blading was, but I didn't know what an actual blade was. So I, in fact, once cut myself with an X-Acto knife, which was exceedingly stupid. So when I'm reading this book and Steve Austin is like, I got a scalpel from the building. I'm like, a scalpel? Like, what? It's 2001. I mean, it's a billion-dollar company or it's on its way there. It's gone public. Like, nobody could find the proper blade to cut JR.
Well, they could find one. They just want to make sure that I got plenty of juice.
Oh,
and
my.
Because there were a lot of guys had blades. And Arn Anderson always made my blades. And when I had to do something, because I always got beat up, and I generally got bloodied more often than not. But nonetheless, no big deal. That's how it was cast. That's how the play was written that week, the senior drama class or whatever.
Well.
But, yeah, it was – I was – look, I didn't even look at the scaffold. It's like getting a. It's like somebody when you give blood.
Oh God, I wouldn't have looked at it either.
So it accomplished the mission of getting a proper dramatic effect, but it didn't accomplish anything of making Steve a heel.
Well,
people loved him. They still love him.
They
will always love him.
Yes. Now, ironically, I just watched that show 1 week ago today. That SmackDown where you guys had that confrontation. And we all are well aware, and you write in the book that you knew this going in, that this is a bad idea. And Vince wasn't really down with it, but he felt that he owed it to Steve. And so they pulled the trigger and Steve Austin turned heel. And we know, because this was 20 years ago, that in fact, you were right, and Vince was right, and everybody else was right, that this was a terrible idea. But this segment with you and Steve Austin, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the air, this segment was so great. And you and Steve, like, it was perfect. He was the, like, as a character, okay, he was the greatest heel. He was so unlikable. The byplay between you two was so great. The beating was so vicious. Vince is so awesome telling him to lay it in, Steve. I mean, it was so good, but like as a business move, it was so bad. So I just want to give you a chance to kind of talk about like Steve's ability to be a heel versus how bad it actually was as a business idea.
Well, gosh, there's a lot to talk about in that regard. The Vince's yelling, open him up, was the cue for the audience to turn their head to Vince.
It was misdirection.
And when he did, that's when I got cut. So that's how that worked out. That was the deal there when he screamed down there, open him up. Austin put more knots in my head than you could ever imagine. I said, what? Is that how you work with everybody? I said, that's total crap. You know, I was frustrated. I was, my heart was beating about a zillion miles an hour, you could imagine. And he said, well, we had laid in live TV. I said, it's taped. It's SmackDown.
It's a taped show.
He laughed. So anyway, the deal was, look, Austin was John Wayne. And you notice all the smart bookers, i.e. producers, directors, like Howard Hawks and John Ford, all these dudes with all these Oscars, never booked John Wayne as a heel. The audience would spit it right back at you. Okay, we understand he's making a movie, but we don't like it. And I think that's how I felt about Steve. I know it's an antiquated analogy, but he was our John Wayne. He was universally loved for his courage and his defiance, his, you know, anti-establishment stuff. People loved him. They could identify. So, but here's the thing. We did owe it to Steve to try it. He wanted to try it. And sometimes when you got a talent that has contributed as much as he has, and still does, by the way, you want to try their ideas, even though they may be bold and out there a little bit, but he earned that right to try. And so for that reason, I had no issue going along with it. I just thought at the end of the day, it wasn't going to work because people loved him too much.
You know, here's a question. Here's a hypothetical here. So the Raw after WrestleMania, they do a rematch with Austin and Rock in a cage. And basically Triple H shows up and Triple H and Austin destroy the Rock and they bloody him up and they beat on him and he leaves. He leaves the company for a little while. Do you think that if Rock would have been there as a regular to take that spot as the top babyface, this might have worked out a little better? Because the way it worked out, Steve turned heel, Hunter's heel. You really had no top baby faces at the time because Rock also left at that same time.
Exactly. And it was always set up for if Steve wanted – we all knew, look, Steve wanting to be a heel was no – well, wow, I didn't know you had that in your mind. He talked about it all the time. He liked being a heel. It was fun for him.
And he was great at it.
And he's played a character. He liked that role as the villain. But I think that, like anybody else, he liked the role of getting those massive royalty checks even more. I would. So, but if they set up for Austin and Rock. Rock had his heel run. You have a whole different series of matches, different positions. You know as well as I do that if you have a quality guy like Rock, one of the greatest of all time, and he and Austin, Rock was the flag bearer. He was the top of the babyface mountain. The damn thing would have worked. It would have worked. Because those two guys would not have allowed it to fail.
You know, it was very interesting reading the chapter. We don't have a lot of time to talk about this, but, you know, right around that time, I'll just throw this out very quickly, the XFL kicked off, and then it died. And you note in the book that Vince seemed to carry that around, even though he wouldn't talk about it publicly, and how ironic that 20 years later, he in fact was still carrying it around. But we have to head to a break. Back in a moment, Observer Live.